Sierra says, "My home is in the valley. I live at the foot of this mountain. Hawk Mountain rises up like a wall from my backyard. It is my sacred place. I have been coming here since I was a child. I can trace the trails that cover this mountain like the lines on the palm of my hand. I have favorite rocks, certain trees I always touch when I walk by. I scramble up the escarpment, the woods breaking on occasion to offer a view of the land at the foot of the mountain. The way I move up the path, hopping from boulder to boulder, one movement bleeding into the next, is like a dance. I don't think about how I move. I memorized the choreography long ago. My dance always ends at North Lookout. I stand on its shoulder, thrust forward on a precipice of rock. Hawk Mountain wraps its arms around a bowl of flaming orange trees. The hazy fields, stitched together by carpets of forest, are rolled out like a rumpled quilt. I've been coming here long enough to notice the development. Houses like plastic Monopoly pieces lined up in clusters. Through this valley and along the ridge runs the National Scenic Appalachian Trail, a 2,150-mile-long pathway stretching from Georgia to Maine, the longest continuously marked footpath in the world. Both my parents hiked this entire trail when they were close to my age, unaware of what the future held, that one day they would live in its shadow and raise two children who have come to love the natural world as much as they. My bottom grows numb. I have been sitting on this boulder for a long time. I feel as if I have become a part of the mountain. The view, though startlingly beautiful to someone seeing it for the first time, I sometimes take for granted and do not give it the appreciation it deserves. I take in the view like I take in air. I am no longer conscious of it. But just as I need oxygen filling my lungs, air to exist, the view from Hawk Mountain also sustains me." Mountains and valleys, rocks and trees and trails, vibrant visual images describing Hawk Mountain wrapping its arms around a bowl of flaming orange trees. Making her way through the world as though dancing, Sierra says the sights, sounds, the whole surround of nature sustains her like air, like the very oxygen we need to breathe to live. Sierra here sounding some of the key themes that reflect the way she and her brother Bryce have learned about life and living in their own backyard that includes Hawk Mountain in our region and halfway round the world in places like the Himalayas, and the many trails they've hiked together as a family and all they have learned along the way. All that has become a metaphor as these two young people choose their own paths to travel in life. And because they have learned to breathe with these fundamental life rhythms, in Ann Ulanoff's words, they are like good plants making oxygen. And the oxygen each of us makes is breathing space for all the rest of us. We desperately need everyone making her or his share of oxygen for the planet, for creation of social space that can hold opposite views, and to create enough room to find and construct peace. Their mother, Cindy, has been a visual artist almost all her life. She tells us, "As an artist, I had already trained my eye to be more observant, to notice shapes, patterns, light, and color nuances that an artist must be sensitive to in order to draw and paint. But I simplified this looking process down to a child's level and taught them to tune in and be aware of their senses." That from The World Is Our Classroom, how one family used nature and travel to shape an extraordinary education, by Cindy Ross, issued recently by Sky Horse Publishing. The book is beautiful and warm-hearted as Cindy relates stories of the family's travels, but it's also practical with suggestions to help other families embrace the fundamental approach to living and learning Cindy is passionate to share with others. Son Bryce has now become a sought-after illustrator, and as it happens, his illustrations give shape to Cindy's narrative throughout this book. Cindy Ross, artist and author who lives in New Ringgold, paid a visit to the WVIA studios with Bryce Ross Gladfelter, her son, to talk with us about their remarkable adventures in living and where it all began for her.
I did the whole entire trail. I broke my foot, so I had to do it in two halves. But I wasn't thinking I was a writer then. So my first book is, it's all hand calligraphy with 125 drawings. So I was thinking still artist. But that's been in print for 35 years. It's called A Woman's Journey on the Appalachian Trail.
Well, what about a change in your life at that point?
Well, it was the trail, the Appalachian Trail, that changed it, as was my husband's too. I think mostly it's when you get to the end of it and you realize that you just accomplished this amazing feat, physical feat, that any dream that you might have, if you worked hard enough and had enough passion, it would come true. So I decided to start writing books about my big adventures. There weren't that many women that were having them back then.
Bryce, we know you put pen to paper and you also hike. Tell us about how it all has come together for you.
So I kind of grew up on the trail with my parents from age 1 to 6. Every summer we would be out there backpacking along the Rockies. I don't remember drawing much out there because I was almost too young, but it kind of forced you to be creative. And essentially whatever you found around you, whether it was bark or like the bones of something, it's kind of morbid, but you'd be forced to be creative and be an artist essentially. So I think that's where it stemmed from. And then after that, every travel that we went on, I would have like a journal or a notebook with me, and I'd be scribbling caricatures, people watching, you know. So that was kind of always accompanied with me.
And you saw his talent and interest right from the start.
Yeah, I could tell. I mean, both kids always had to keep a journal, but Bryce, and Sierra drew too, but Bryce was always drawing. Like we say, we were like in Ireland, we were going down a street, and then we would... looking at all the things around, and Bryce would go, did you see that man's nose? And it's like, he always used to focus on faces. And so even when he was a little tiny kid and was drawing all the time.
Yeah. Like, unlike you, I wasn't reading Socrates, but I had like Michelle Silverstein and later Edward Gorey. And those were like my go-to.
Always the weird and the creepy.
Mm-hmm. It's the truth.
You finished your studies at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. Did you then say, okay, I'm going to make art? How did things unfold?
I did. I had two solo painting shows. I had 45 oil paintings from the Appalachian Trail, and then I did the same after I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. So I still wasn't thinking writing. I think I had 4 published books before I even wrote my first magazine article. I just started to paint with words, and I don't know. I only had 1 writing class when I was in school, and I only got a C. So I always got A pluses in art.
What opened your eyes to the fact that words could be a primary medium for you?
Well, I think that I was having more success selling magazine articles, and painting was harder to sell. And I wasn't making as much money, and I needed big blocks of time to make oil paintings. And I loved it. It satisfied me as a creative person. So I think that I kind of segued into being a writer more than a painter. I've gone back to landscape painting lately, but I don't know. It seems so connected, whether it's writing or art. It's all art.
And what do you see, Bryce, when you look at your mother's earlier work and see what she's doing now?
So there was the ones from way back in the day, and then every now and then it seems like you dabble a little bit more into plein air. But I guess it's more of an inspiration for me to know that she started out with one very distinct, separate path as fine art, and then detoured completely into writing, and now could switch back and, merge into another art form. So it just shows me that although illustration is my complete focus now, then maybe one day I can branch out or just allow a different path to take over.
How did education become so much a part of your lives, all of you?
We homeschooled them or, you know, taught them ourselves till they were 8 when Sierra had to fill out an affidavit and start homeschooling seriously. And when that happened, I put them in school because I had 2 book contracts in 1 year, and they were in public school for 7 years before they taught themselves the last 6. But I was terrified, especially for Bryce, when I put him in public school, because I was afraid that they would kill his creativity. Not on purpose, but that he just wouldn't have the time to put to his artwork that he wanted to. And Sarah, too. She was into textiles and made jewelry, and they both had their own business when they were 13 and 15 and sold to, like, the Reading Art Museum shop and made thousands of dollars in 1 year. You know, they had their own business cards. They had to keep track of their money. And it was a wonderful experience for them to say, okay, well, maybe I don't want to make jewelry. Bryce was making these clay heads with magnets and things like that. And he would use bristle from a brush for hair. And they made a ton of money, but they learned that they could make a living from their work. And I was afraid when he went into public school that he wouldn't have time to do that. But our school district was wonderful. We took them out of school about 70 days a year, even while they were enrolled. And they always found time to do their artwork. So as far as my book goes, The World is Our Classroom, I figured out right from the start when we were out on the Continental Divide Trail that we could teach them so much about the natural world. And then when we realized what an influence we had on them, whether it was creativity or travel or whatever topic it was, we could do that no matter where we were, you know, traveling at home, in public school, teaching themselves. We were actively teaching them whatever we knew and or they wanted to learn regardless. So I wanted to make this clear in my book that this isn't about homeschooling. This isn't about public schooling. It's about playing a bigger role in your kids' education, whether you're a parent or a grandparent. And one of the biggest things, too, Erica, was that when you're spending time outdoors in nature or you're traveling, it stimulates your senses and it makes you hugely creative. And I read a book by Daniel Pink, A Whole New Mind. And he was saying that years ago, the corporations and the companies were looking for graduates that had an MBA, a Master's in Business Administration. But now they were looking for MFAs because these kids, regardless of what they were selling, they were thinking outside the box and were thinking creatively. And no matter what they were selling, they wanted their employees to be creative thinkers. And so being outdoors, traveling, doing those kinds of things, being in nature feeds that creative part of you. And it's not like this frivolous recreational thing that you're out in nature going for walks. We're feeding our kids' souls and minds as creative human beings that they're not getting anymore because they're connected to technology.
Mm-hmm. How much time would you say you have to spend online for your current work, Bryce?
It's getting, unfortunately, more and more unavoidable, or so it seems. As much as I would ideally love to just be doing hand-done drawing, like traditional style illustration. Nowadays, even just communicating via email, finishing color on Photoshop, it is like kind of ingrained in me that I need to at least rely someone on technology. But I've tried to make sure that most of my process just comes from hand-done art. So I could even like go out and sit along the river and draw, or get at least those first steps done completely separated. And I feel like making that distinction and knowing when to separate is kind of key.
And you learned that growing up.
Yeah, exactly.
We never had a television, so they always were doing creative things, whether it was, you know, writing plays. We would go on a trip and they would write a whole soundtrack and perform it then of songs.
You definitely had the time, and the lack of distractions always allowed for that.
Part of what you're saying there, Cindy, about being out on the trail and our senses coming alive has to do, of course, with being in the moment.
No, you are. You do live in the present moment, which is really hard to do back in this life, in this society, because there's so many distractions. Mm-hmm. So that your focus was different, you know, and I don't think we do that as much anymore. We don't just take time out and you know, look at cloud patterns and things like that. And it's really important. You know, Fred Rogers said that play is the work of childhood. So those formative years, if kids aren't getting out to do that, if they're looking at a little screen in their hands instead, they are going to have a serious lack as adults. And I don't think it's going to equate to more happiness either. or health, whether it's emotional or physical, certainly physical health. If kids aren't getting around playing and running around, they're not going to be physically healthy either. But it's just multifaceted as far as what it's taking away. I used to say that television isn't a bad thing. It takes the time away from, it steals your time and your life of what you could be doing otherwise. And it's the same with technology and computers and phones and things like that. You know, in Richard Liu's book, Last Child in the Woods has stepped up everyone's consciousness about how important this is. And I think like the environmental education centers and the nature centers, they have a whole lot more programs for families so that if the schools have cut out art and music and things like that, at least some of the nature centers are doing their part.
Cindy, you just used the word family and you've done all this as a family. Obviously, there are always tensions in families, but there can also be that support. And if there's a respect between a parent and child and parent, then the child has a foundation and can go out and take risks of all kinds.
That's right. And I talk about that in my book, too, about pushing beyond your comfort zone. There's a story I tell about climbing Half Dome with Bryce when he was 20. And we had this discussion for like an hour at the bottom trying to decide if it was safe enough to do because it was raining. You have to pull yourself up these cables. Someone had died the week before. And, you know, it's like he had spent 20 years following his parents around the planet, crossing rivers and, you know, snowy passes. So he trusted us and whatever we said was the best thing to do. But he also saw that the risk and the adrenaline rush and all those things that are important to young people, we could still figure out and manage and do that together. And the young people still need that because I think if they had more time out in the wilds with their families doing some risky things like running whitewater rafts, you know, rafting or climbing mountains, they wouldn't think about maybe driving fast cars and drinking and dabbling in drugs because they all need that anyway. And Bryce and Sierra, because we spent all those years having those adventures in the natural world, they trust us and they're close to us so that when they get older, and, you know, it's this whole thing about if you don't let kids have some risk-taking experiences, when they get older, they're not going to have the facilities and the experience to have that as a reference point to say like, okay, I'm not happy in this job. I would like to start my own business, but I've never done anything where I stuck my neck out and taken some risk. So even climbing a mountain and crossing rivers and doing things like that will teach them how to be better adults and more grounded with their dreams and things like that. And spending time with their families out there will just make their, I mean, we know a lot as adults. And it would be good if our kids came back to us when they got older for wisdom. And if you don't build that their whole childhood with experiences and time spent together, they're not going to care that much about you because they're not going to feel like you cared that much about them. You know, parents now they're as addicted to their screens and aren't spending the time with their kids. And the kids are overscheduled and they aren't having these wonderful experiences. So it's just so multi-layered, the benefits that you get from raising and educating your kids this way. Everybody wins.
Bryce, tell us about the dome experience.
Oh, man. It was pretty frightening. I had seen pictures from back in the day when my parents first did it. And back then, you could actually camp at the top of it. But this, like, it was a sheer rock face, and all you had was essentially cables and then these wooden slats to make your way up. And essentially, I looked down, and I had, like, the sewing machine knees that were just shaking. It was probably one of the more terrifying moments. But we made it to the top, finally, after scaling it. And as soon as we hit the top, it started to rain, and we had to pivot and literally come right back down. But I did feel safe the entire time, and I think a lot of that goes back to just the family unit that she was mentioning. And throughout my entire life, there's been so many moments like that, like in the wilderness, lightning, storms, where we had to make calls, like, do we continue along this ridge? Do we go down and camp in the valley? So all those times working together as a family, I think it just made me more confident later in life. So when I'm trying to navigate through the equally scary things of like graduating college, finding a job, communicating with clients, I do feel like it's okay to take the risk because I have the support to fall back on.
The other thing, too, is that it teaches you critical thinking, even as a small child. Because when we were out there, there were times when our llamas were acting like meatheads, and Todd and I had to take the llamas because we traveled 3,000 miles with these llamas and the kids, and we would tell the kids, you know, you guys go first, be careful. But they could figure out how to navigate a pass or figure out where to place their feet to cross a river on rocks. And they were really little, like, you know, 3 and 5 and 4 and 6. But they were already using critical thinking skills to figure out about decisions. And, you know, I have two friends who helped me with my book and my life. And they were homeschool evaluators and child psychologists, PhDs, that said that those formative years that they spent out there, they developed a different kind of a brain because of the critical thinking and being in the wilderness and being in nature. So, we, you know, we weren't aware of this when it was happening. It was just that it was fun. We wanted to be together. We loved being out there. But I figured out, Erica, about 10 years ago that I was on to something as far as helping parents and grandparents figure out a better way to raise and educate their kids. That's why I wanted to write The World is Our Classroom, because we didn't start out 25 years ago thinking, oh, I'm going to like revolutionize parenting and educating. But I think I really have some amazing information to share. And I think that it would help every parent and grandparent's job to make it easier, because let's face it, it's more challenging than ever to raise happy, healthy kids.
That's the content of the book. But let's talk about the book itself, because Bryce, you had something to do with the way it looks. How did you work that out?
Well, I have two main areas, nature and travel, that we use to focus on. Was my publisher asked for that, but it's very, very broad. But while I was putting the book together, I realized that it wasn't like this body of knowledge or information, which was most important to get across. But while we were out there having these adventures and experiences, we were learning all these virtues and values alongside of it that you can't necessarily learn in a schoolroom. Like empathy that we've learned from being with wild animals or working in the field with wildlife biologists, different things like that. Being with our elders, going to find our relatives in our homeland, you know, taught us about connection and who we are. And so that's what's in the book too. It's not just information and knowledge. It's how can we make our kids be better, kinder people that care? That's really what's more important. And so that's what the topics are, like, you know, learning the difference between a want and a need and what a priority is. So it's the kinds of knowledge that any parent can use to help them raise their kids that they're not getting in school. And what's great is that, you know, I made my kids write their whole lives, whether it was keeping a journal on a trip or every experience that they had. So they're present. Their writing is present from when they were about 12 to 28. There's essays. There's excerpts from their journals besides Bryce's drawings that he illustrated it.
It was really cool. I contributed a bunch of illustrations to the book, and I try to keep them like pretty expressive in the style of line work that I did, because I wanted to capture these moments and how spontaneous they actually were, whether they were traveling or just learning from nature. So it was really cool to be involved and put that like quick experience down. But then also just to read the book and hear all these things and all these moments be put into words, they were always buried in my subconscious, but it actually started to break it down for me in like literal terms, and I could see, okay, maybe this is why I thought that way. This is why I made this decision in life. So it was kind of cool to see it put down on paper, and I'm glad that I could add my touch to it too.
Doesn't that make you glad?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, going back to work on the book, Erica, I thought, wow, we've really had ourselves an amazing life. But, you know, I tell people when I speak that I always told my kids, look, I'm giving you this amazing childhood, but I expect a lot from you. I don't expect you to just like cruise through life and just roll through it. I expect you to make the world a better place or a more beautiful place, one or the other. So I have one that's making it a better place here as an anthropologist and a geographer and works with climate disaster and water issues. And Bryce is an illustrator. So I've got one who's making it more beautiful and one who's making it better.
So it sounds like you're living up to the expectations mom and dad have had of you.
Yeah. It is a lot of pressure to say, like, I got to make sure my kids make the world a better place. But I feel like the key thing in that is that you honestly would support however we wanted to do that in which way.
Cindy, tell us about some of the books you didn't mention.
Well, I have six other books, and And there's three others that are still in print. And they are all my three long journeys, my hiking journeys. I'm what's called, Todd and I are what's called a triple crown hiker. So we've hiked the 2,100-mile National Scenic Appalachian Trail, the 2,600-mile Pacific Crest Trail, which goes through California, Oregon, and Washington. That's called Journey on the Crest. And then we took our kids across the Rockies for 3,100 miles, and that's called Scraping Heaven. So those three are in print. And actually, Scraping Heaven and Journey on the Crest just came back in print last year.
Cindy, you've talked so much about our senses. Bryce, do you have any particular sensory memory that jumps out?
It's hard to say, especially from the early years, because I was pretty young. But I do have more of like sensory impressions, or I might have like an image of waking up in like the dew on like blueberry bushes in the woods, or just like the sense of wind. But I can't really capture it in a very specific memory. But it's still strong enough that it feels as real as, you know, even current memories.
And when we've been back in the mountains, like we went back, well, Todd and I decided that 20 years later we would go back to the Rockies, and we just finished what's called the Great Divide Mountain Bike Trail. It's the longest mountain bike trail in the world that goes from Jasper and the Canadian Rockies to Mexico. So we just mountain bike 2,700 miles, and the kids came out to ride with us, and Bryce started us off every two. It took us three summers, and he was with us the first 2 weeks. But and being up in the Rockies and passing through the same passes, even though he was like four, five, six, there were feelings that came back from being up there that were, you know, buried in his psyche, but that were brought back to life just by being up there. You don't remember, you don't know if things are from your memory, from looking at slides, from stories, but then when you're in that place and it feels comfortable and at home, then you know that, you know, you've been here before and it made an impact no matter. Because I don't like when parents are like, oh, I'm going to wait till my child's 12 before I go. And I go, don't wait that long. You know, once they start having attitude, bring them out there right away so it becomes their place and their home. And you can't fight for anything like the natural world or wild animals unless you care about them. So you don't start at 12 to start to care. Even if you don't have kids or grandkids, you must know a neighbor kid that could use some help getting outside and disconnecting, that you could take for a hike, build a campfire, you just so many things. Teach them about the stars. There's kids everywhere that could use the connection and use the stimulation of being out in nature. And who knows, we could get all kinds of artists that could help the world.
It sounds like you're saying it's all of a piece, a creative way of living for the good of ourselves and others.
Well, you know, I'm a really people person, as I think my kids are too. And I think that there's so many emotions that are stirred every single day when you turn on your NPR station or whatever. And I think it's the connection of caring and loving each other and being there for each other, whether it's expressing it through books or music or art or anything. But really, when it comes down to it, it's our connection and how we communicate to each other. And I think that my book and our lifestyle helps you be a better communicator. And that helps you care on a deeper level for one another, because there isn't anything that's more important than taking care of each other. Nothing else is. It all comes together like that.
Cindy Ross, artist and author who lives in New Ringgold, Bryce Ross Gladfelter, her son, both speaking with us about their collaboration, The World is Our Classroom, How One Family Used Nature and Travel to Shape an Extraordinary Education, recently issued by Skyhorse Publishing, Cindy the author, Bryce the illustrator. Cindy Ross welcomes opportunities to speak to schools and to community groups, and for more information about the book, this book, or her other writing, and the opportunity she offers to speak to groups, all online at CindyRossTraveler.com, C-I-N-D-Y, CindyRossTraveler.com. The book is The World is Our Classroom, How One Family Used Nature and Travel to Shape an Extraordinary Education, recently issued by Skyhorse Publishing. And to see Bryce's remarkable images, you can check his website, BryceGladfelter.com, B-R-Y-C-E,
GladFelter, BryceGladFelter.com. The book is celebrated by so many writers, including Richard Louv, who writes, Cindy Ross is one of today's most eloquent and thoughtful writers on the connection between humans and the natural world. And that is, the world is our classroom, how one family used nature and travel to shape an extraordinary education, issued by Skyhorse Publishing. For more information on the web, CindyRossTraveler.com. The book is not just a memoir, but it is a practical guide, even for people who can't travel farther than their own backyard. There are sections titled Nuts and Bolts that give specific advice for implementing a way of living, such as is outlined by Cindy Ross in The World Is Our Classroom.